Britain gets sweet. Rich gets richer. Poor gets poorer. Is it just like you want it? Like a party but lonesome? Does it mingle in heaven while it stands here?
Yeah, I figured out what to do with my third marimba. But now it's the other two sitting idle. What's up? Corby Wright. Finished today's program with a song called Is It Just Like You Want It? From her 2006 release, Presto Bingo. The Books, remember The Books? Man, they were the rage for a moment there. 2003 release called The Lemon of Pink. We heard that right, Ain't Diddley. King Crimson, I finally saw the documentary over the weekend. It's quite good. In the Wake of Poseidon was their second record. Some called it a clone of their first, but it had a real nice tune called Cadence and Cascade, which we heard. We heard Lubomir Melnick playing beautiful continuous piano mode piece called KMH from Piano Music. In the continuous mode, it's just constant cascades of pianos. Chandeliers before that did Mr. Electric. We heard Alain Pierre's soundtrack music to O Siddhartha from 1974. Gillian Lee Bowling, John Duncan, and Elena M. Rosalavita with Ether, The Prickly Balance, an excerpt from that much longer piece. And at the top of the set, going out to our pal Kimzilla and her wonderful pup, Pip, Pippies and Cockles from Greymouth. Hey, my name's Scott, and I look forward to seeing you at the new schedule. Next week starts next week. I'll see you then, friends. This is Freeform Radio, WFMU in East Orange, WMFU in Mount Hope, New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM, worldwide online at WFMU.org. Stay tuned. Miracle Nutrition's coming right up. Bye.
Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Join me now, won't you, for a full hour of radio. Well, and I gotta be honest, it's not always a full hour. I never go over, but I go a little under sometimes. I find it very difficult to precisely time it to the hour, and I apologize to the other DJs for that. But it is so close to being right around an hour long, including this introduction, which I think is 52 seconds, if I'm not mistaken. Captain's log, lady, my dog, and I woke up and had breakfast. We had, what was it? I should do these things in the morning. Then, I'm embarrassed to say, I watched nature cams for like an hour, because you know space really gets to you. And then,
Captain, please come to the bridge immediately.
Give me 5 minutes. I'm right in the middle of this damn log.
Captain, it's urgent.
Roger. I'll be there right away. All right, what is it, Mr. Lou? It's a Remussen ship, Captain, and they're hailing us. Are our shields up? Shields are up, but theirs aren't. Should I open communications, Captain? No, not yet. Let them stew a minute.
But, Captain, we don't even know what they want yet.
Well, maybe neither do they. I'm gambling that they hailed us before they even thought things through.
What the hell? Answer the damn phone!
Oh, okay, good point, Lieutenant Butchie. Ensign Don, open a channel to the Remussen ship. Hello? May I say who is calling, please?
This is...
No, you go.
Go. All right. This is Remussen Commander Spatake. Am I speaking to the famous Captain Hardy?
Well, it's Captain White. Hardy is my first name. You make it sound like I'm a children's show host.
Oh, sorry. In our culture, the first name is the surname and the second name is the given name.
Oh, I'd be White Hardy.
Like White Hardy of the Anti-Pixies.
Anywho, you are quite the celebrity on Remus.
Really?
Oh, yes. Your exploits are known throughout the galaxy.
Doubt it.
Wow, okay. Well, thank you. You made my day.
Your what?
My day. Oh, the amount of time it takes the Earth to rotate.
How in the hell am I supposed to know that? That seems like extreme minutiae.
Oh, well, it's a small but considerable amount of time. Do you have time measurements?
Oh, yes. We measure time by the endurance of the great fragrance, the amount of time between spraying on your perfume and when you can't smell it anymore. We're a smell-focused species.
Oh, that's great.
I'll get to the point. Because you are famous, you have come to represent something to people who have never met you and subsequently have formed relationships with you in your absence, with absolutely no input from you, and yet expectations have been created. Entitlement has ensued, and we demand your presence on our planet for the celebration of Hartyfest. It's just 50 endurances. There will be films and listenings and panels and things, and you just answer some questions and pose with some folks, and a lot of them are probably going to want to make out, so bring some mints.
Now, hold on. I have done nothing to promote myself like this.
Then why do you do your popular radio show called Captain's Log?
What?
Captain's Log. It's broadcast throughout the universe daily. You share all sorts of intimate and embarrassing information about yourself, which endears you to many.
You can hear that? I thought that was my private audio diary.
Oh my God, really?
Ah, you had the thing set on broadcast, I bet. Now, hold on. I take responsibility for this, but I have to respectfully decline.
You ingrate!
No, I appreciate the whole thing.
Fire gluon torpedo ray!
No!
Wake up, White. You're dreaming.
Oh, wow. Hey, Lou. I thought I was famous on a spaceship.
Want to be funny and dead? It's better than funny in bed. You can cannibalize for laughs, giggle in bloody bloodbaths. Funny vampire killers. Funny vampire killers. Funny vampire killers. Or pardon me, your teeth are in my teeth.
Morning.
Morning.
Blood. First thing in the morning.
It's good blood, too. I just got back from New Orleans, where they add chicken blood to their blood to stretch it out, and now they've developed a taste for it.
Well, this is fresh squeezed. From whom, may I ask? A beloved school teacher, whose students will cry and moan with grief at her demise, and through whose pain we may grow stronger and sow terror. Who wants sausages?
Man, listen to this. This is a crossword puzzle clue today. Blood-sucking ghoul. What the heck?
Yeah, I remember when I was human, they'd say, hey, beer-guzzling blowhard, and I'd say, thanks, bigot.
I need blood to survive.
I know, same.
Stuff like this is dispiriting.
Is the answer even vampire?
Let me see. Five letters.
Well, it's not vampire, then. Do you have any other letters?
First letter, B. Oh, and last letter, H. Second letter, U. Third letter, T.
Butch?
Maybe. No, Butka, that's a K. Wait, no, that could be a C.
I feel singled out. Well, you are a blood-sucking ghoul, strictly speaking. So what? I still take it the wrong way regardless. I'm coming for whoever wrote that clue. Oh, listen to this. The editors of the local newspaper crossword puzzle are going to be at PuzzleCon.
Oh, we should totally go and kill and cannibalize them.
I'm in. No, wait there. I have a better idea. Let's teach them a lesson by turning them into vampires. Then we can make the daily puzzle into a hypnotic device to bring victims to us. We never have to leave the house again. Delivery?
Full contact delivery. What a dream.
Show me who I have to kill, and I will send toys and me.
everywhere. There is water everywhere. There is water in the air, and your glasses fog over when you walk in. And then among all the plants and the trees and the water are trains. Trains going in and out of plants, in and out of small buildings, around in circles. Empty. And all of it for Christmas. In a small shed next to the garden.
The fake manger.
Our people.
People.
Staring at a manger scene with live animals.
Jesus and sheep.
But a doll Jesus.
Jesus and a donkey. Jesus and chickens.
Cold. And inside.
Flowers.
Trains. And plants.
Flowers.
And moisture in the air. Trains. And plants. And moisture in the air.
Presenting the award for best sound, Butchie Spinoza and Lou Register.
Sound is all around us. It is something that we hear with our ears, and it lets us know things that are happening sound-wise.
Sound is a very important component in all sorts of things like radio, too. Here are the nominees for Best Sound. Blue Beauty. Honey White Sound.
I have to go after her.
Not in this song, you don't.
But Blue Beauty.
Blue Beauty can take care of herself now.
The Hotel Show. Honey White. Sound.
He opens the lock. Enjoy your stay.
Thank you. I don't need to register or give my name?
Believe me, we know who you are.
Fake Ozu thing. Honey White, sound.
You must be very lonely. Yes. I would be very lonely if I was an old man like you and my daughter moved out. Yes.
Fractured Fairy Tale, Monkey King. Honey White, sound.
One day that stone transformed into a stone egg, and from that egg hatched a stone monkey.
I'm a monkey made of stone.
When the monkey stood, light shone from his eyes and the whole world shook.
And the winner is...
Honey White, Blue Monkey Hotel.
Allowed. No crowds of children or a million slow-moving dancers or chance meetings with branches of like family but not family. Farms on the edges of the cliff fall off and harm scroll takers as driftwood is made from the layers of meanings and charms on the counter of Japanese shrine gift shops. Move in on atrocious bombers that glom on to marvelous souls. Tape them blind where they sit. Whole villages of pit vipers or baboons or a menace in general like lunacy or mad anger disease. These are the names of the people who showed up for their shot or their neighbor's building moving need. freed of the chains of card tables and seating assignments of cafeterias. Gone are the days where magazines swatted people for their gullibility. Fraught are the endeavors of the deceptive because their world requires such detail, manufactured from the need to deceive, and the minds of the many absorb the water of the stagnant imagination. Watch the fellow with the magic green cape fly above the street on strings. Bring the cape to the sidewalk and walk around until someone takes the cape. My head is your ship's bathroom. Two racks and two sinks for the runoff of disappointed hearts. Dangers are strange, urgent, carefully built clocks and a range of a rare bully's building blocks. Emotional cloud weapons and wealth. Save one now, nor save wrong more layers or levels or whatever they're called in games. The same as cards. Rules for a short period and then laws, and fools realize the sway of Meemaw's in-law's rage. Arrange like a pet funeral or a garden trial. Read most of the ceremony from the same page, then turn dirt and also paper for a while. I am not a famous spaceman, nor am I a famous vampire, thank God. That is proof that prayer works. Because I specifically remember saying, I don't want to be either of those things. There's a whole list of things I don't want to be known for. One, everything. So I don't really have to make the rest of the list. I don't mind being known among my friends. That's fantastic. And among my friends, I am known for pies. I am known for not having made any recently also. So there's some disappointment there. But I like that. I'd rather be known for something that I interact with other people close to me with. So being good at cards, which I'm not known for. I'm known for liking cards, which is lovely. I think that's fine. You don't have to be the best at everything. And there are plenty of people who have played sports and everything that have given so much pleasure to themselves and others through the sports that you don't know their name. And you'll never know their name because they can't all be in the Hall of Fame, which is getting so big now, they're going to have an actual room for it instead of just the hall. And I think that's smart. It's like, oh, it was smart. When we started, we just had them in the stairwell. And now the awards have spilled over, and it's a grand ballroom filled with awards. I love that. I don't mind awards as long as they say, you know, to occupant. I love that. I get things in the mail all the time that say, to the current occupant of this address, we would like to thank you for your service. Because I must have served something at some point, right? And this is true. And even if you're serving yourself, you're serving a percentage of the populace. And there's no, don't diminish that. Don't ever put yourself down. Oh my goodness, unless you're on, let's say you're on Ed Sullivan in the 50s. And then you think, oh, that's a fantastic, look at this edgy new comedy where you put yourself down. Comedy started where, I think with like jesters, and the jesters would mock the king. This is, I think, a fact, but I've just learned recently that some of the jesters got killed. You know, think, oh, you know, they have a pass and everything, but I think occasionally the king would just like take your head off. So I don't know really what the jesters' job was. I think jesters were treated really like modern day TV comedy writers. In that, you know, just keep being funny and you'll be fine. The minute you aren't, you're gone. So that's something. There's a hierarchy. You'll never be king, is the message. So your existence is just to make me laugh and entertain me, fool. You know, dance for me, fool. And there's plenty of people who love lining up to be fools. I would love that. I would love to be mocked by somebody in power. And then give them some delight, and then they also take great joy and delight in my demise. That'd be fantastic. So I could bring pleasure no matter what. Oh, here I stand now saying people don't know me, and I know they do, from listening to the radio and saying, I know who Hardy White is. And are you putting down the people that do know you? No, I'm just saying it's not, I think it's different than fame, or celebrity, and you know the difference. Come on, let's not be obtuse. You know the difference between Tom Hanks and Shinola. So, this is what I'm saying.
You know, you can... I know there's a TV weathermen that are better known than I, and I'm fine with that. And you say, oh, you're just... It's sour grapes. It's not sour grapes, my friend. Give me some advantage of having people not know you, but have just think they know you or something. That's what fame is. It doesn't correspond to riches or power even. Nothing. It just means that, you know, you've been turned into a fictional character. You've been made into something else, and you're living a life in others' brains and people that you have no interaction with. That's different than a coworker. You know, so, oh, I'm inside so-and-so's head. Yeah, but you got to see them. You can work things through and everything, and you still have some say in their lives, some input, some influence. Not so if you're, you know, the Edward Robinson of someone's imagination. Now, I'm not putting myself on the same level as Edward G. Robinson. No, I'm not. I'm not. Am I, though? I don't know. He's gone now. I'll take his, you know, I'll take his place. No, I don't want to be known. Here's another thing. I'm not super emotionally strong. I can't imagine actually being in, like, you know, doing something that you do to acquire celebrity or something. What is that? See, I'm just stuttering around. Because it's the pressure and everything. Oh my God, my anxiety would be off the scale. I can't even imagine. I'm not capable of doing any of that. And this is it. I can talk. I'm talking to a microphone, and I pretend it's a personal diary, and nobody's hearing it. That's it. That's all I do. And occasionally, I get email like, "What is this?" And no, that's not true. People do contact me, end up being friends, especially if you live in a town that I don't have any friends in, and then you become my little Marriott or whatever. So I try to get friends in all towns so that, you know, have some place to stay. I love you, but there would be criteria as far as coffee. And coffee situation, I got to know. That's awfully dependent. I know, it's stupid, but, you know, and the older I get, I just want it to be there in the morning. And even some hotels, it's not enough. And I remember I was up for the WFMU marathon, and I was staying in a hotel. And the coffee was, I've never been in a hotel like this. First of all, the coffee in the room, you expect to be bad. And then I went downstairs, and it was like there was no public coffee. And I said, that's really odd. And they had a restaurant down there. And I said, can I get one of your coffees to go? And, you know, and they looked at me like, what? Okay. And they gave one to me like no one had ever asked. And it was repulsive. And I'm not sure if I said coffee or if I said I'd like some water from the Hudson River. I'll just heat it up. And then, I don't know, spit in it. But there was a coffee place. Next door was the PATH station. That stands for PATH station. And it's where you take the train into the city. And then back again, maybe. And then there's a, you know, there was a little walkway. And there was a coffee place there. And I learned to do that. But I had to walk there in my pajamas. Actually, I sleep in the nude. So I had to go downstairs and walk past that it naked, completely naked. And this is in March. It's very, very cold. And I remember being in the coffee place, and I'm the only nude person in the coffee place. And here's the great thing about New Jersey in general. Nobody's looking at me, which is lovely. No one noticed me. I didn't get hassled. It was hard to even get waited on. I couldn't, you know. But then I go back to the room, you know, and drink my coffee like I normally do. And you eat a fistful of drugs or something in the morning, watch some classic movies, relax. And that's not, I got to have that in the mornings. I know I can have that at your house. And now here's the thing. Now, is that Hardy White telling you that? Like, if I was to show up, would all that be true? You know, who is the me that we are making in the distant head together? The distant head. Yeah, somewhere, a bathroom on a ship. You and I are there. What are we doing? We're hiding. What an adventure that would be. I would just do that. You know, here's the thing. If I was on the Treasure Island ship, you know, the little boy was hiding away there. He was on a ship full of pirates, and he chose to hide in an apple barrel, which is really strange, because I would just go to the bathroom, hiding there, because I don't think pirates use it. It just doesn't seem... It seems like they'd use it for the first couple of months at sea or whatever, and then it would become absolutely unusable, and they'd just go over to say, we'll just do it over the side. And so you just go, you know, hide in there, and these magazines and all sorts of things. We can stay in here the whole journey and be stowaways. It's wonderful. I love the imagination like that. Now, you don't have to take credit for stories that you create either. There's no art that you really need credit for. Say, I want money for it. Lots of ways to get money for it. Just sell it. And then someone will give you money. And maybe you want a reputation. Say, I want a well, have it small. This is my advice. This is really Epicurus. I'm not mine. I'm not talking. I'm talking of Epicurus, the philosopher. And, you know, he said, live obscurely, which is like, just let your friends and all know who you are. Don't live in that. And it's also great. It's very much the same as a crime family. It's a criminal enterprise. Very Southern European way of thinking. And then I love it, you know, and so I just, you know, my friends know who I am and my reputation. So whose house would I need to go to if I had this kind of emergency? Or who would I call if my basement flooded? Not Hardy is what one of the things they would think. And try to be consistent. I know, why are you giving so much advice? Because I'm trying to be off-putting. Try to be consistent. You know you can't be helpful in a certain situation, don't make no attempts. Say, oh, well, you know, I want company this weekend. And you go, oh, I could come over and keep you company. If you know that'd be a disaster and you can't do that, go, no, never call me for that. I'm for pies. Just know what you can contribute. And don't try to be all things to all people. Hardy. How about if I just talk to myself? See, I think that's better if I'm just giving advice to myself, which I am. I don't know you. How can I possibly be giving advice to you? That's what scares me about people on the, you know, persuasive people. Saying, you should do this or that. And they're giving advice to people they literally don't know. You know, so how can that be valuable advice? Advice is not, general advice is pointless advice. So you know, you ought to, if you have a dream, you ought to go for it. To a what? To a psychotic murderer? What's the dream? It matters. I don't want my psychotic murderers to be motivated. I want them to start questioning themselves. So I said, never question yourselves. Well, that's not a good, no maxim is going to do it all the time. That's why if you're involved in the lives of others, you can be involved in the subtle adjustment and the subtle learning and growing together. Instead of depending on solution, bumper sticker solutions and things like that, or the, I'm going to join that organization because they say, you know, here's the five things that can bring you to mental health. Hi. My name is Dr. Lawyer Hardy White. Smith my name. Cheese. A lot of letters after my name. And I would like to introduce you to what I call my five principles of healthy living, both healthy physically, mentally, spiritually, capability. I've made a bunch of things. That I've made up the umamis of emotions, emotions you didn't even know existed. Now, what are they, salty, fishy? And I'm going to help you navigate that in your life by giving you some hard and fast rules. One, never. And you can apply that to anything, really, never. And put anything after it. But just make sure that you negate a thing or multiple things. You know, just have things that you avoid. Two, do it. There are some things that you should suppress and some things that you should execute, that you should live out, that you should act out. So pick a thing like that and do it. Three, shemp. I don't know. I'm making things up. It's not going to help you. Shemp might. That's what shemp represents. What does shemp represent? Well, did you pick him as an icon? Me? No, that's like a half a generation before me. Latched on, as I did, because I'll tell you why. Here's the thing about the Three Stooges, and I've said this a lot. You know, in the early days of television, there was more television than there was shows. And so when they started saying, well, we can show children shows on the television, they didn't really have any. You know, so they had, there were some local shows you can come up with that. So they started showing cartoons, but they hadn't really made any cartoons yet. So they showed the cartoons that they used to show before movies, you know, like Bugs Bunny and all that. Popeye. So Popeye. And all that was from the, you know, the movies. And you go in the movies back in the day, even the, you know, silent days, the end of the silent days. And they've had that weird bopping up and down Mickey and everything. So, you know, those cartoons went on. Now, eventually, you know, come the early 60s, they started cranking out some poorly made cartoons. But the other thing that they went back and aired were Three Stooges shorts, or two reelers. They were a good length, you know, between like 12 and 15 minutes or something. And you put those on, and they're like kind of cartoon length, and that'd be perfect. So a generation grew up watching this. I mean, a couple did, you know, the people in the theaters, but I feel like it didn't affect them the same way. But it hit differently for the another generation, and they developed some sort of parasocial relationship with the Three Stooges, I'm speaking personally too. And they began to maybe learn about them. And the beautiful thing about the Stooges is they're kind of iconic. You know, they've got a look, they're stylized. You can make a cartoon out of them. They each have a special signature haircut and all that. And there's a certain fascination with the fact that there was the third Stooge would change over the years. So there's the curly, you know, but there's also the Shemp, another sibling. And Shemp is the only one really that had an acting career outside of the Three Stooges. See, he was in other people's shorts too, and he was in movies and everything he had because of his kind of rough looking face and strange demeanor. He was an extra. You're not an extra. He had, you know, speaking parts and everything, but outside of the Three Stooges. And he's an interesting guy because there's a certain sadness in getting laughs off of your face, off of the fact that people think you're homely or ugly, the fact that your hair is crazy or you're nuts or anything. And it is possible to have a kind of an epiphany and realize that you can have this global appreciation. So you can start to appreciate the person who's doing it and see the character as sort of a separate, you know, iconic sort of you know, paradigm. I'm not making up words now. I'm not making up words. I'm just using them wrong. So that's what I mean, archetype kind of thing. But that's not the right word either. I don't exactly know what I mean. It begins to represent something, a symbol, and a style, a face, and a person, and a fun thing to say. And when you have something like that, you can kind of adapt it. It no longer becomes the person Samuel Horowitz. It becomes more like a legendary thing, a character that we all know, and like a Robin Hood sort of thing. Even if there was a historical equivalent, that's not what we think of. When we think of Robin Hood, we think of the cheesy old actor, or we think of some cartoon fox or something like that. And the same goes with Shemp. So Shemp didn't set out to be Shemp, a strange underground comics icon or something. He just ended up there, and it was because of a niche that he happened to fill. But thank goodness, I'm not sure that Samuel Howard really had to endure, you know, a lot of the downside to it. I wonder if I don't think the Three Stooges were sort of like people would descend on them and go, "Oh my God, the Three Stooges!" I mean, and by the time they were popular with kids, they were elderly and they were frail, and people did seek them out, you know. There's always that, you know, I called up my childhood hero, and they're in a old folks home, and I got through to them, and I interviewed them for my college radio station. So people do that. I think I'm talking about somebody specifically, but I'm on pretend I'm not. Oh, my goodness. Isn't it fantastic? We, yeah, it was the three, Full House guy did that. The late Full House guy. I believe he called one of the Three Stooges in high school or something and interviewed him. Bless, that's nice. He says, someday I will be part of a three-person comedy team like that, and then I'll die unexpectedly. Maybe didn't think that part. Well, you never do. But that I should know who this human being is without ever having met them is very strange to me. And I hope that I don't defame or say something awful. See, that's the thing. You know, you think you own them or something. You know, remember that famous guy died like this? Start talking about him and their family hears you and they go, oh, talking about Papa. And it can get very sad and very tragic because the celebrity is gone too far. And so now you have people that think they know someone who's not present. Now, I'm going to do a special experiment. Now, I'd like to, not long ago, I saw a mentalist. Now, what's that? What's a mentalist? Is that somebody, is that like a mental hygienist? Cleans your mind for you? No, but you should see one of those monthly, maybe even. Every 6 months. Crazy. What am I made out of? Money? I saw a mentalist and they would guess what you were thinking, you know, and it was wonderful to see. And I noticed that the mentalist had done some subtle, not really subtle, because I was trying to figure out how he did it. So he did some really pretty blatant suggestion first, which is great. So suggestion, then you understand that people, you know, how people think collectively. Or you know what you have to know to be a mentalist? You have to know what the most popular answer on Family Feud would be for any given clue. Do other people understand me? Other cold reading people understand me. Now, so I've watched this. So now I'd like to try to do a little connecting with you remotely. Now, this also has a lot of the Men Who Stare at Goats, the movie, and remote viewing. I've talked about it before, but I'd like to try it now. This is very strange to me because I am doing it over time because you're probably not hearing this live because we have there's a 24-hour delay because I say curse words a lot and sometimes they can't figure out if they're curse words, because I say them in a different language. So there is a lot of research involved. And so the kids, all the interns at WFMU go through my shows. They look for what could be objectionable. They look it up. They take it out. They leave it in. I want to be able to now sort of see you. What am I going to do is I'm going to describe someone I see, a listener, and something that they're looking at. All right? And I'm not going to say, oh, I see somebody with a head and they're looking at a radio. I'll try to be as specific as possible. Now, it might, though, still be cryptic. But it's designed to have the person who I'm talking about know that it must be them. Now, I don't want it to be anybody. If it happens to be somebody who knows me or we know each other, don't respond to this. This is only for people who we've never met. We do not know one another. And I want you to concentrate right now, even though now is in the future. Isn't that bizarre? So I'm going to give you a series of numbers. 127-891. 127-891. And I want you to think, 127-891, 127-891. Just like that, in your mind, right now. All right, not out loud. 127-891. And what I'm going to do is describe what I see. And if you think it's you, I want you to contact me. Either do it in the comments or you can email me later. You get HardyWhiteShow at yahoo.com. And contact me that way or through the comments. I am seeing something. It looks like somebody's looking at their bracelet. It looks almost like a Fitbit. It's a bracelet like that, but it could be like a bangle bracelet or something like that. As I said that, you raised your hand up a little bit. Somebody has like that on. It's the left hand. I'm now seeing you're wearing a ring on your on the pinky of your left hand. It's red. There's something spider-oriented adjacent. There's a either your hand is near something that looks like a spider. All right. And the third thing is kind of a comic booky face, like maybe like a Wolverine. Actually, it looks like a like an ant face. It looks like the ant in the thing or whatever the movie, not the thing, the movie, where, the fly. That's what, no, it's a fly, fly face from like maybe the movie The Fly. Now, I know that's really strange and maybe it doesn't make a lot of sense. If you think I'm talking about you, I want you to say, Harding, now how did you do that? Are you looking through space and time? And I would say, yes. So, you know, we'll discuss what just happened, if it indeed did happen. Now, why did you do that? In the middle of talking about living obscurely and Epicurus and everything, why would you talk about that? Because I want to discuss something else that Epicurus said. Epicurus said, don't eat fava beans. And the reason you don't want to eat fava beans is because the stalk of the fava bean is hollow. And that stalk is a conduit for the dead who are buried beneath the ground for their spirits to shoot up. It's like a vent, you know, it's like a gas vent or something. So there's spirits coming up through that hollow fava bean straw. Now, this is something that can be, imagine, he didn't have any sophisticated tools back then. This is all something he did intellectually. It's all through thought experiments he figured this out. No subtle measuring devices, nothing like that. They did not have the ghost detection technology that we have today. And so there was no EVP or anything like that. So, you know, don't eat fava beans. How about that? Isn't that something else? So you shouldn't eat them anyway if you have favism. I'm not making a joke. So, oh, that's the artistic movement. No, it's a genetic condition. And you can't eat fava beans, but you have a higher immunity to, what is it you get from bitten by mosquitoes and everything? So that's pretty good, right? Malaria, that's it. So you might not be able to eat fava beans, but you get some protection against malaria. Now, in Southern Europe, that could be helpful. And, you know, if you can eat the fava beans, well, that's great. You know, enjoy your fomadamus, but you probably don't have any kind of natural immunity to that. Oh, life is wonderful, especially if we pay attention to pre-Socratic philosophers. No, I kid. Pay attention to me. You must listen to me now. Listen to this show. Be intrigued by it. Say, oh, it's interesting to me because you talk about one thing, then you play some music, and then there'll be kind of some kind of little skit. Don't say the word skit. We really are going forward at a good clip, aren't we, deck peasant? It's bosun, sir, and aye we are. What do you suppose makes this ship move forward like this?
I'm fairly certain it correlates with a good, strong, steady wind.
Wind, eh?
Yes, Captain.
I'm not so sure.
What's your theory, Captain?
I think we are being pulled along by angels using invisible ropes. Very soft ropes, too, like a satin, but invisible. The reason is, I saw this image in my head and I said, oh, enchanted and magical beings of the spirit world, guide us to our destination. And now they are.
That may very well be. For redundancy's sake, though, we are using maps and a sextant and a compass.
Superstitions die hard, don't they? Not even sure we should live without them. What harm does it do for you to do your little calculations on your charts and all? Whither the invisible toe angels may tug.
True.
I'm not blaming anyone because I know it was the ship's wheel come to life and crawling around like a spider, but my left glove is missing.
It's on the ship's wheel, Captain.
Oop! If it had been a tankard of ale, it would have bit me.
When I was very young, I went to one of those strange hybrids of a baby's nursery and a school called a nursery school. And it had one of those names like Shady Nook or Little Garden that could have also have been the name of a pet cemetery. And I would go there for a few hours each day to get used to being separated from my family and experience what it's like to be around humans that don't unconditionally love you. To me, it was sort of a day prison, where I experienced what it was like to have a lack of privacy in the bathroom and be forced to lie still on the floor like we were hiding from soldiers or monsters. Now, granted, I was a shy and frightened child generally, so the strangeness and loneliness of this experience was amplified. When I refused to go out to the playground with the other children and hang out with the teachers, this was perfectly normal behavior. I mean, the teachers had been civilized already, unlike the dangerous and ignorant mob of four-year-olds throwing sand and being emotionally confusing on the so-called playground. When I got home that first day, I tried to convey to my mother what a house of horrors this baby prison was, how we were forced to potty in plain sight of other children, how we were forced to lie still, how other children displayed disturbing and animalistic-type behavior, their shrieking and sand-throwing, and to top it all off, there's an old man there with a hook for a hand. In my telling, I implied that he might have been a pirate, just so the story would be emotionally truthful, if not factually correct. The old guy who mowed the lawn and fixed things did have a prosthetic hand. Now, this was not my first experience with a handless adult. My great-aunt only had one hand and could peel a potato faster than two-handed folks, but she never wore anything on it, and also I was terrified of her for the first few years of my life. One day, when I had again refused to go to the playground with the rest of the kids, a teacher thought I might like to see something since I was interested in talking about birds. She brought me outside, and there was the pirate. He looked a little less scary close up. He was hanging something on a tree. It was suet, he said, for the birds. And though he was not overly friendly, I saw him taking time to care for the birds. And I learned something. I had to overcome my fear and ignorance, but when I did, guess what? I learned.
I rose and everyone rose. Frozen dead roses and everyone loses, cause everyone froze. I don't care anymore, nothing is worth fighting for. I don't care anymore, nothing is worth dying for. I tried, then everyone tried. Eyes, I then everyone lied. Now they're trying old liars and everyone's tired. Everyone's tired cause everyone lied.
And the morning, hallelujah.
Hey, gang, what crimes are we gonna solve today? How about the one against humanity that is the shirt you're wearing?
What's wrong with my shirt?
That shirt is so loud, it causes visual tinnitus. It's so hideous, no one will notice your face, which is good.
Well, wouldn't they look away?
Oh, no, it's like a car accident. But instead of dead people, it's colors that don't go together. And composition that leaves you feeling disoriented. So, no crimes until you change.
No crime solving.
Whatever.
Speaking of crimes, the old porterhouse is haunted.
That's not a crime.
They say it's because old man or woman Porter was killed there.
Nobody was killed there.
No, Lou may be right. I heard there was a murder there, too.
Oh, well, that confirms it. We got two corroborating rumors.
Well, we can easily look it up.
Or break into the house and investigate.
Oh, brother. You don't know the first thing about breaking and entering.
I know. I know that you do, though, Butch, so I'll defer.
Thank you. Here's the plan. We walk in the front door.
Well, what if we're discovered?
We pretend we're burglars.
What now?
They'll be terrified.
Or shoot us.
I doubt it. They figure nobody wants to come in there, and they are correct.
But the love of mystery trumps morals.
Absolutely. You in, Hardy?
I'm changing. I'll meet you.
Welcome to the liminal space back rooms haunted house. There are many rooms to explore, and they're all empty. Not a soul to be found. No mere mortal can last here long, since nothing happens. Prepare to be driven crazy by ambient hum. Had enough yet? Is it too same? Is this some space between worlds? Or is it a world unto itself, but not very interesting? Did you ever go to, like, a bus station that you know's gonna be empty and just sit there in the chair at night? No, nor have I. Terrifying. I did have to work at one very early in the morning, and I would get there at sort of 5 a.m., and it had that vibe, but I had enough to do where it wasn't really terrifying. Like this is. Are you ready to leave?
Alex Hamilton is the name I have heard of. Gather everyone, there's a game in the war park tonight. I love everything about spring, like the deafening trumpets. I got recognized in the cemetery parking lot this week, and the angels cried for me. They were sad, I tried. Standing under a waterfall right now. At the hinge lift, there's a game with the Crawfords tonight. Oscar Charleston is a name I have heard of. In a long ball, all the way to the waterfall again. The Black Yankees cry. They were sad, I tried to be an alien when I wasn't one. An outcast when I wasn't one. An alien when I wasn't one. An outcast when I wasn't one.
I got steam, heat, and gas. I got steam, heat, and gas. I just wrote that. It's my pajama game theory, it's called. And it's a new musical. Oh, I hope you can come to it. Here's the thing. I won't debut it until I know there's a date that all of us can agree on. Imagine if things worked that way. It never happens. I've done things like that. Hey, do you want to go on vacation? Yeah, let's all go together. Well, let's come up to a date we can all agree on. No, never do that. Pick a date, and then the chump who can't make it, can't make it. That's just the way it goes. Because otherwise, it'll never happen. You must always, always just settle on something. And on all aspects of your life is my advice. Just pick a thing. I think that about... pick a thing early. I tell kids, stick to it and don't change. I go, what if I'm not good at it? Too bad. I mean, you know, but you might be when you're, you know, really old, because that happens too. Do something long enough. Boy, I was just listening the other day. I'm going to do this for you. It's not a dead on impression, but I just memorized a little bit of it. Oh, shoot this thing. I'm overwhelmed. Here you all done come to see me. There are three questions I'm asked wherever I go. The third question is, did you really play football at Mississippi State? Yes, I really played football at Mississippi State. The second question, is Marcel Ledbetter real? Yes, Marcel Ledbetter is real. And the first question is, I forget now. Oh, I had the whole Jerry Clower routine memorized. What's the most common? I don't know, man. I forget now. Yeah. Are you? It's funny how you remember stuff and then you do. I used to have that memorized for a reason. Why? Well, because Jerry Clower started as a fertilizer salesman, and telling stories was a way of getting sales, right? So people come to, you know, dang old Jerry, I like him, I'll buy his fertilizer, funny man. So, you know, he persuaded people, and he didn't start till really late. So he didn't become really a stand-up comic or whatever the heck he was until I think he's like in his 50s or something. So if you think you're, I don't know, if you've been doing it the whole time, don't switch to stand-up comedy if all these years have been spent, let's say, alone on a boat. I mean, maybe you could be funny, but if you have been sort of entertaining people by being a rabbi or a school substitute school teacher, then possibly stand-up, the stage is the place for you to go. Oh, my goodness, we are near the end of our time together. Both literally, figuratively, everything. Mostly just the end of this hour. And I have had a great time visiting with you. I hope you've gotten a little something out of it. And you enjoyed the show. And was put together by a whole team, just me. I love you so much. Thank you for joining me. You have been listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange. WMFU Mount Hope. 91.9 in Rockland County in New York City, New York. And online at WFMU.org. Worldwide freeform radio. The way only the owls can come on home now. You say what? Oh, thank you for joining me. And I will see you again next week.
Twins' name was Ebony. Her name was Mahogany. 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 Twins' name was Ebony.